Hey, it's Trey here from the Modern Romantic Podcast. I wanted to take a moment to say thank you so, so much for listening. Wherever you are listening from, it really means the world to us. Emily and I started this podcast to share inspiring stories and celebrate the many forms that art can take. Having you here along for the ride as we continue that mission really inspires us to keep going. We are constantly blown away by every single listen, so we really mean it. Thank you. Okay, now get back to the interview. This one's good. Hello, and welcome to the Modern Romantic Podcast, where we celebrate and inspire romanticism through passionate people doing incredible things. Hi, I'm embracing my weird. Hi, I'm Trey. And I'm joined by my delightful host, Emily.
Hello. Hi, Emily. I'm steeped in weird, so yes.
How long do you need to steep in weird?
I mean, you're kind of steeping in weird in the womb, so.
Yes.
I feel like we're it's baked in.
It's a nice brew. It's a nice brew. It's the kind that you can't throw over in the Boston Tea Party. I don't know. I'm going with it.
It's amniotic weird.
I think any other noun that you had associated with amniotic would have just sent me over the edge. So I'm glad you went with that. You know, I had a thought and then it completely escaped me. Archer said, suppose it depends on how hot the weird is. I don't know. Yeah. So one of the things that we were inspired by with Felicia Day, we were scheduling her to be here with us, and separately, Emily and I purchased one of her books called Embrace Your Weird.
Oh, I know. And I have my mirror. My camera is... Let me fix that quick.
Is mine? Oh, yeah, mine's also backwards. Okay.
It shows my good side. Now I feel weird. But I'm going to embrace it.
So, Embrace Your Weird. For our listening audience, it is the one with a pencil drawn like a lightning bolt on the front. Face your fears and unleash creativity. We were so inspired. I got this book maybe about a week ago. and it is honestly one of the things that I love the most. And I have only gotten through really the first couple of chapters, because it's a book that you can do things in, that you're in. It's intentional behind the things that the book is asking you to do. So it has sections where you are instructed to write different things, draw different things, just do some sort of activity inside of the book. And the biggest thing about the book is that she keeps saying, and by she, I mean Felicia Day keeps saying, you may not show this to anybody, but it's more about getting it down on the page than it really is about anything else. Yeah. I feel
vomit.
Like I just...
I think she equates it to vomit and puking. just spew it.
Yes. And that's one of the beautiful things that I love about this. There are a couple of passages and a couple of topics that Emily and I will talk about throughout this this episode here. But one of the things that I want to call out first, just as my own personal selling, that if you don't have this book already, and even if you're not a creative, please go get it.
Wait, can I hold on to that thought?
Okay.
I want to stop you, because even if you're not a creative is a statement that I want everybody to reconsider in their own selves. If you feel like you are not creative, I would love to show you how you actually are. And we might even do that tonight. Please go.
You know what? No, I'm going to take that back. Everyone is a creative. So even if you don't feel like you are creative, I highly recommend this book. There's a passage where, and we won't give everything away from the book, but there's a passage where it instructs you, draw the worst picture of a horse in the space below. Make efforts to draw as badly as you can. Overachievers are uninvited. And then you go through the process, you draw the worst horse ever. And down below that, it says, "That sucks. You nailed it."
I love that. Do you have paper handy to, even if you don't, I know the book is meant to be drawn in, but do you have something you could draw a really bad horse on right now?
Honestly, no, but I could go get some paper.
I'm
It's
gonna.
across the way. Hold on.
I have this
I'm gonna go
notebook.
grab a pencil and some paper. I'll be right back.
I'm gonna just start drawing, and I'm
Okay.
gonna talk about how great this is.
Okay.
Okay, so the reason why this is important, because a lot of people will sit down and just be like, well, what does a horse look like? Let me think about this. And like, the idea is to just get it out. And without doing a lot of thinking and overthinking and judging of those thoughts, because that's what we automatically do. We automatically start to reconsider what we've already thought. So the idea is to not do that. It's just to get it out. So without me thinking much about what a horse looks like. Also, this book doesn't want to stay open. So this will be a challenge. I wish I could draw it so you could see it. Let me see if I can do that. Make sure my pen works. Get the head here. Starting to look a little bit like a dog. That's okay. Also, they have those. I'm sorry, I'm not facing the mic. I don't know if anybody can hear me. The horse has those backward knees. But in the front, they don't have backward knees, just like dogs. I'm done. Oh, I forgot one leg. I think trying to draw a really bad horse can still include all four legs. So I'm going to go for that. Also, I don't know how to draw hooves. So there we go. My horse has a mohawk, and it looks like a reindeer nose.
I love everything about this. Okay,
And because
hold
I
on.
love drama, the horse has quite a long tail.
All right, mine is supposed to be like running in the wind right now. Let's see. Okay, if you can like see this right now.
Oh my gosh, your horse is running. It's like on fire.
Is on
I
fire.
love it. I was going to add
Sounds like
something.
she's gonna hop in.
Yep.
Okay, sweet.
I'm going to dedicate this to Kaz. Oh, of course, I'm mirrored. My drawing is to Kaz. And if I had the inclination to add horse armor, I would. But Kaz is the master of horse armor, so we'll let her do that.
I'm quickly adding hooves to this. I am so proud. It is this horse is on fire, and I don't know in what way, but
That's
I love it
wonderful.
so much.
That's wonderful. I feel like, also, I do have a question. Do you think it's important to add an eyeball or an iris to a horse? Does that make it less evil? I added one at the end. I didn't show everybody. I'll show you. I added the iris because otherwise it was a little bit. It looks so much like a dog.
the truth found, why did I tune in late and what's going on? So, Emily and I were really inspired by Felicia Day's book, Embrace Your Weird, and we were doing one of the activities from the book, which is intentionally drawing a horse badly, like the worst possible horse that you could possibly draw.
I don't know if this is the worst horse I could draw, but I did just go for it, and I think that's the point.
Yeah, I mean, I think mine looks more like someone genetically modified a dog, but that's still valid.
I think my camera won't focus.
So the point about this book that we were really getting behind is it gets you out of your own head, and that it's promoting that that people who don't think that they're creative or have difficulty unlocking that creative side of themselves can use this book to overcome that. Well, we will tackle that in just a second.
Oh, there we go.
Hello.
Yay!
Hello.
Oh my gosh, I'm so fired. I apologize. I had a snafu with my daughter
couldn't be picked up by the person who was supposed to pick her up. So I had to drive across town to pick her up from school, and it just completely slipped my mind. So I want to apologize in the most romantic of ways. My tears are falling like rain.
We figured something happened like that, so no worries.
Yes, no, I've really been looking forward to this conversation. Ever since you reached out and told me what you guys cover, I'm so taken by your expertise and your subject matter. So thank you for having me on. And again, I apologize profusely.
Oh, no, that's fine.
You're here. That's what matters.
Yay! I'm very happy to be here, of course.
Emily, can we do the honors and introduce our guest in the most magnanimous of fashions?
We can.
Okay, great.
Okay. We can. I like how he's saying that as if I'm ready for such a thing.
Okay.
Although, can I actually? I'll do it. I don't know. I want to say that while we were stalling, we were talking about your Embrace Your Weird book. And we decided with our audience to go ahead and draw a horse, the worst horse.
Oh, let me see it. Did
and so
you?
We did it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We didn't do it those in are... the book because, but at least this way.
These are much too high quality. Y'all.
Oh, well, that was kind of, mine definitely looks dog-like. We were focused on just going for it versus making it bad.
No, I love that. No, you should follow your own capabilities. It should mm-hmm. be just from your heart. My heart is much messier, and my horse would look like it would have many elbows. That's my problem. Although visual art has just never been something I could do. I'm sure if I practiced it, I could get tolerable, but it's certainly not my art or my any advantage I have in life. So I always look at any artists as just magicians in a way. Because what they do is magic, to be able to take something and turn it into 2D and just express themselves. Yeah, it's beautiful.
I agree. It's a little beyond me for most things as well. Like, I don't paint or anything like that, so.
Really? I mean, look, I mean, no insult, Trey, but I think Emily's had a little bit more of artistic soul. Her mm-hmm. horse, yours had a very, it looked more athletic. I'll tell you that. You had an athleticism.
It was like on fire, running.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would buy you as a very aggressive, like, athlete. And then Emily, you're more of a, like a, kind of a, you know, a weeping horse.
It had a dramatic tail, at least.
That's true.
well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nope. Emily, go ahead.
Yeah, we can just start from this. We can just start over.
Okay. Yay! I'm so sorry to interrupt everything.
It's totally
congratulations. Not. I am the worst. I have to tell you, I recently got back from Costa Rica, and ever since then, it's been a nightmare because I traveled so much. I love traveling. I love experiencing new cultures. I love seeing new places, but I decided to be a little too aggressive in my scheduling. So I went to like 5 countries in like 5 weeks.
Wow.
And it is not the way to do something. It is. You're just exhausted. Your brain doesn't know what time it is. I went through 2 daylight savings times. Oh. And I have to say, I am a little bit of a brain fog situation because I never would have let something like this slip my mind before. So, oh, well.
I get
or it. It's age.
I get it. Yeah. It's like being away from reality for that long, too. It feels different when you come back.
I mean, I had to go to the optometrist today because I had sat on 3 pairs of glasses and I had no way to drive. So... The good thing is that in driving across town to get my child, in getting dark, I could actually see versus like the rest of the week. I've been like, things are blurry. It's fine.
It's fine.
Recently, it's been driving at like, I don't know, 7:30 at night. And it's just astigmatisms in both eyes are just, oh God, it's the worst.
Oh no. I have astigmatism in one of my eyes. And you know, when you go into the eye exam, you want to be good. You want to really give them your all.
Yeah.
And or you kind of want something really bad to be with you so they have something to work on. I don't know. It's a weird psychology I approach it.
I agree. You're like, at least for me, I try not to wear my contacts so many days in a row before I go because they'll be like, we can tell you're wearing them a little too long. We could see the vessels or something. And you're like, no, I swear I take them out as much as I should.
Oh, no. See, I'm the opposite. I avoid my contacts because I can barely wear them one day without my eyes drying out. Mm. And the only times I really wear them are working. So when I'm doing stunts on set I have to wear them because it's just dangerous not to. And then when I'm doing hosting, I have to read the teleprompter. So other than that, I don't wear contacts, but now I'm getting a little farsighted, so I can't see up close as well.
Yeah.
So I have to get progressives, but I'm in denial. So I'm like, no, I'll just lift my glasses up to look at my phone.
That's
I'm like,
what
well,
I
you
do.
Just
That's what I do. You can ask Josh, our moderator. He watches me do it every day.
You know what? God bless our vanity.
Right. I'm like, yeah, I don't want, well, I probably need new glasses anyway, but I could, because I can get away with it for now.
Yeah. As long as things have, I mean, I remember the time that my mom took me to Lens Crafters in the mall to get me glasses. And I was probably like 16 or 17. Like it was old. And I had not seen leaves in years, but I didn't know any different. I was like, oh, it's blurry. The world is blurry. I just didn't even add it up. And I was like, whoa, there are leaves on trees. I could see them.
The detail.
It was, yeah, the detail was stunning. Maybe that's, you know, when you think about, I read somewhere that Monet and some of his contemporaries, all of his art was blurry because of the fog, the
it's
smog.
Funny, because I thought that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I read that that's probably it. So let's just see. Or they had a cataract.
Yeah, impressionism is just a glassesless society.
Yeah, exactly. Glasses or just pollution-filled, right?
Right. I'm going to do art based on my floaters. Just squiggles.
That would be brilliant.
And I'll name this one Tom.
And they get in little fights.
That's kind of like amoeba. That's what I told my daughter. I'm so bad at being a mother because I have, my mother was the same way to me. She's like, don't walk down the street when it's raining or you'll be swept down a drain. And I like to this day, I still think, oh, I'm going to be swept away to the sea from a drain. You can't fit in those, first of all. But if you tell a kid that, they're going to think about it. And I did this something to my daughter this today. We were reading about amoebas in like a biology book, which she's 6 years old. And I was like, guess what? If you go swimming in a dirty pond, you can get a brain eating amoeba or a protozoan. Anyway, it's one of those creatures. Don't go swimming in dirty ponds. And she looks like stunned, like she was going to get, and I was like, oh, it's okay to get in the ocean. It's okay to get in a pool. It's just dirty ponds. Don't go swimming in dirty ponds. She's like, okay. And she was obviously traumatized for life.
Like, that's it. The damage is done.
Damage is done. I wielded my brief medical knowledge with really bad, to bad degree. I'm so sorry, kid.
Why, Mom? Why?
She'll say that one day to the therapist and then to me. Fine.
You'll be like, I remember that day.
Yep.
It kind of reminds me of that episode of Rugrats where they had fears, or they incited fear of eating a watermelon seed would cause a whole watermelon to grow in your stomach.
Oh, my grandpa told me that and I believed it. I was a very gullible child. So yes, I believed that until probably age 20.
Mm-hmm. And how many bugs are in ketchup and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but wait, what?
Oh, I remember kids talking about that at school. Like you'd have, I don't know, hamburger day or whatever in the lunchroom, and there'd be a bottle of ketchup and a bottle of mustard and whatever out on the table. And they, you know, kids would talk about it like, oh, don't eat the ketchup because when they make it, there's bugs in it. And I was like, really? Like ground up bugs.
Oh, my God.
So I avoided the school ketchup. I'd eat ketchup at home, but the school ketchup, no.
Well,
ketchup.
That's, you know what the truth is? I don't, I'm sorry, I'm totally taking you off topic of romanticism, but figs and wasps are symbiotic, really related. So if you eat a fig Newton, you're definitely eating wasp eggs or wasp body parts, and it's just what you're getting. And it's fine because fig Newtons are my favorite. Actually, Newman's Own fig cookies are my favorite cookie that you get on off the shelf. But you're eating wasp when you eat figs, because that's just what happens. That's how they fertilize. That they wouldn't have figs unless the wasps symbiotically fertilized and all of that.
How many figs did you eat off my tree in South Carolina there, Trey?
enough to have some incredible religious movements.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can really only eat like 6 or 8 without starting to feel it later.
You know, it's a good way to clean yourself out.
Mm-hmm. It's they're high in fiber. It's healthy.
Mm-hmm. It's plus delicious. Better.
Yeah, protein too. You could probably survive on them.
Bonus protein. Mm-hmm. That's right. Welcome to the podcast, Felicia Day.
I'm so happy to be here. I derail everything I do. So okay. Not only am I terribly late, but I will derail your theme, your intentions, anything you planned on. It will never happen. Thank you very much.
Always up for whatever, so it doesn't matter. Right, Trey?
Yeah,
well, plus it's a live show. You could never predict anything. I'm sorry. I talked right over your answer, Trey. I'm so sorry.
No, I think it's that thing in theater where you just kind of have to go with it. Mm-hmm. And it's no matter whatever you're thrown, you just kind of go with it. I've told this story, I think, a couple of times to people off the podcast, but I have this incredible scar on my left shin from an accident that I got while I was doing a live performance. So it was taking place inside of a theater, following a little too close to somebody. I got clipped by one of the chairs in the audience and wound up hitting it so hard that it left like this nice little concussion, and had a bruise in my leg for probably about 3.5 weeks before it started to feel better.
Wow.
But the thing I remember the most is like sprawling out into the aisle of the audience, landing like really hard in a bird costume of all things. And this parent leaning over the side and going, "Are you okay?" And it was one of those moments that you just think, okay, am I going to stop this performance and ruin it for these kids? Or do I keep going and I just like worry about it afterwards? Well, I took the latter option, and we get to the Q&A portion after the show, and who asks the first question but the guy who leaned over and is like, "Are you okay?"
Oh my gosh.
And it turned into this great thing about theater and about life in general of sometimes you really have to decide, am I hurt enough that I have to stop completely, or do I keep going and I will be okay, but I will probably need to just take it easy for the next couple of days. And I think that smoothed it over with the parents, and I'm now left with this great scar. And then 2 weeks later I fell down a flight of stairs doing the same show, so I'm not danger prone. Yeah.
You're like, can I get stunt credit too?
Well, I will say that I was in Costa Rica and I had a golf carting accident. So I tipped it over and my family was in the golf cart. And as it was one of those things where you realize your life can just change in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just seeing the asphalt come toward the vehicle as we tipped over. And I was like, this is the moment when things are horrible. This is the moment that will live with me the rest of my life, that everybody's injured and we're all killed. It's nobody so was hurt. Yeah, it did. And I looked over and I saw my partner and my child just heading toward there. And I went, oh my God. And I just couldn't, you know, golf carts are not stable vehicles and nobody had a seatbelt on. And thank God no one got hurt. We were on a major road. Nobody plowed into us. Like, it is a miracle. The money that I had to spend on the golf cart being repaired is like nothing compared to the luck. That I encountered not being, but you know, you just realize literally it takes a second and everybody's life has changed. If you're on your phone and you hit someone, your life will be changed. Clearly their life will be changed. Like, it is so fragile, that, you know, just gotta roll with it and just be as careful as you can driving a golf cart. I guess that's,
it kind of changes your outlook after that too, regarding gratitude and
absolutely
perception of the people you love around you and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're totally right. I mean, I certainly value, I mean, at the end of the day, unless you have your health, you got nothing. I don't care how much money you got. Nobody cares if you're dead. They're just probably waiting for you to die to get their money.
I had a whole transition.
I was going to make a comment. And
that was right out the window.
That's why you don't talk about it, Trey.
Felicia, let me just start off by saying that I first got introduced to you through Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, and through then again through The Magicians, and then recently I found out that you were also the voice of one of my favorite characters from Adventure Time. You're also in a video game that that I have up on in my queue, Stray Gods.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
So I have a lot of questions for you. However, I would kind of like to start off by just asking, who was one of the first celebrities that you met that made you that you worked with that made you really nervous?
Oh, wow. I worked at a film festival in Austin and I met Robert Rodriguez and I was super, super nervous because I just loved what he did, El Mariachi, like the whole indie film scene of Austin, Texas in the late 90s and early 2000s probably was why I'm here because that's when I volunteered. Well, I volunteered, yeah, very late 90s. And that was like after the peak of, the indie films and stuff. But at the same time, it was like everyone was so glamorous. Richard Linklater was there, Quentin Tarantino. Like it was just like the height of indie film, people doing cool things outside the box. And I met, those directors and I was like just very starstruck. And of course, I shouldn't have been. They're just people doing a job. But, if you admire somebody, that you get a sheen of coolness that you can't really shake. So
Sure.
yeah, I think that's probably the first person. I mean, I met other people I've been starstruck by are like famous musicians I got to play in an orchestra behind. I remember like I was like my loins were just like fluctuating when I watched Joshua Bell do like Symphony Espanol. I was like, oh, he's so hot. And I got to meet him backstage because I'm a violinist, so it's all good.
That's
Yeah, so I
awesome.
guess you meet somebody you admire and you're excited, and then the whatever hormonal or adrenaline goes away, and you're like, ah, it's just a person,
Yeah,
hopefully.
we're all just people. They say don't meet your heroes, but we decided to make your dream come true today.
I would.
Well, and that's one cool thing about the podcast that we didn't expect it to quite be like this, but we meet our heroes every week that we do a show, whether or not it's a local painter who's known by five other people, maybe their own family, or somebody that's higher profile and at various levels of success in between, or at various levels of their art in between. And I don't know, at least I feel like we meet our heroes every time, every day,
Yeah.
because those are the people that are making art and making life happen in the art world.
Yeah, it's funny because I notice that, especially on Threads, I'm like deep into book talk, and I've written two books, but they've been nonfiction. And my most recent project is an Audible project called Third Eye, and it's basically a book, a scripted comedy fantasy book, but kind of written in a TV format for audio. So I'm like, oh wow, how much more obscure a format could you embrace, Felicia? It's great. It's like a radio play. But like I know that the people I like geek out the most about are authors, and I'm certainly like in the circle of authors, and I've yet to jump in and just write a novel. I don't know what it is. It's just a great vast undertaking, and I don't know, have the bravery yet, or I don't have the character I want to follow yet, but I feel like I'm getting close. But certainly when I meet authors, I'm like way more starstruck than actors because I understand how they work, like they're definitely more attractive than the average person, and they have a glow about them because they have this charisma and confidence. But at the end of the day, the people I want to read about and follow online are mostly authors.
I feel like from this perspective, writing a novel would be a natural step for you. It feels that way from here.
It is. I just have to kind of I change my mind. And I think at the end of the day, if I'm going to write a novel, I need to write a novel that's my own, and I need to not write in the genre that people expect me to or that subject matter. I need to just write something that is fun. I'm not going to be at like a I'm just not the kind of person to write something super profound. I'm so sorry. So it's going to be like some either like a lit RPG or like a fantasy novel or like I don't know, but it'll be something that isn't going to change the world, but I just need to get out of my body.
Sure.
And I just need to be brave enough to devote the time to it because I get real distracted. As you look at my resume, you can tell.
I would not call it distracted. I think It is so diverse because there are so many diverse interests. And to call back to the book of Embrace Your Weird, it's in getting it out of your body. And if it's something that you want to pursue, go do it. If the world never sees it, that's fine, but go and do it and let yourself be fulfilled by the project that you want to go do.
Yeah. No, that's my retirement plan, just streaming video games and writing Kindle singles or whatever it is, self-publishing stuff. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think when you monetize your art or you make it your career, everything is a time cost opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. And so you want to spend your time on what is good for your career. But at the end of the day, your career needs to feed your soul. So, I think it requires constant self-awareness and choosiness, but also allowing yourself to wander. And that's what mm-hmm. we have a lack of in this world, the ability to wander and find things, because the time pressure of produce is so much. But at the end of the day, you can't just make stuff just to make it. You really need to have a reason.
Do you find yourself, because you said distracted, but do you find yourself really just wanting to do it all?
Yeah, no, I have a much more realistic expectation of what I have the capacity for nowadays, becoming a mom and leaving my company, which really drove me very to the edge, because it was hundreds of videos a year and you just can't make that much content. And I wasn't able to put myself in any of it because I didn't have the space to create. You know, you just can't just like poop out content all the time. And yeah, and people want you to do one thing and I don't want to just do one thing. So yeah, I mean, I feel like if you look at what I do, it all has a certain flavor, a certain brand, but I like working in different formats. Like the things I'm working on for next year are stage plays. Who knows why? It's not, you know, that's what I'm working on now. I just have never done it and I haven't done stage stuff in, you know, so long. So like, okay, let's try it. Yeah. So I don't know.
Why not? I love it. That's relatable for me. Because I want to actually do it all. And I've worn many hats for that reason, too. So, yeah.
I have seen them. You kind of stack them on your head at times.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Whether they fit or not. I got to try it on anyway.
Is there any kind of a ritual that you have to make yourself feel more creative or get into that kind of creative headspace?
I mean, I tend to delay as long as possible until I'm just so frustrated with myself that I'm like, Felicia, and I'm at that point right now. I've been doing press for Third Eye for several months, you know, ever since it came out October 5th and a little bit before that, but really then. So it's been like 2 months. And before that we were finishing all the episodes. And so I did have that one project I was working on. It very hard for me to multitask now. I really just have to focus. Mm-hmm. And at this point, but I do carry like a notes thing and I add, you know, thoughts to like either notes on my phone or like a little notebook. And at the end of the day, I'll create like a Scrivener file and just dump it all in. And then I'll start to pick away at something and then I'll get serious. So like, you know, next week I'm shooting a short film for the next six days. And then Monday I'm like, okay, for 2 hours every morning, I'm going to this coffee shop. I'm going to sit in the corner and write. And then that's all I need to do. That's literally it. And I had to kind of take myself out of my own space because I'm just not doing anything in that corner or this corner or that computer or that computer. I really need to go somewhere, get it done, and then give myself a timer. So yeah, it is a self-discipline and also focusing on just one thing, because I'll make notes on like six or seven different projects, even if it's just like a line. Oh, that's a funny line. Oh, that's a funny thing for this character to do. Or, oh, I'm reading this lit RPG. I like this thing in this. I'm going to write that down. So when I write that lit RPG book, I'll have that idea in mind, but it'll just be like a gumbo of mess, and formulating it into something bigger than that is okay. It just requires focus. And then me just saying, okay, this is my next project. You've got to see it through. Even if it's horrible, see it to the end and don't rewrite it as you go along. Just like poop it out. And then at the end, you can decide whether you want to abandon it, want to go back at the beginning and work on it, want to move on to something else and come back. Like, but really, it's just about like the start and the finish line of getting serious about something and seeing it through for me.
Yeah. Also relatable.
Yeah. Because I am not disciplined. I wish I was like that person who could, A, like Brandon Sanderson, writes a book in a month, or, you know, the person who outlines the movie and just is like, I'm done. I was able to lay it out in perfect outline in a week, you know? So that is just not me.
Mm-mm. When you were writing Third Eye, did you find yourself writing for the people who actually voiced it?
The only person I did write for was Will Wheaton.
Okay.
And Lily Pichu, I had seen on stream, and I kind of, as I became obsessed with her, as I was rewriting, I was like, oh, I really want her to play Kate, but it wasn't guaranteed. I had an idea that Neil Gaiman could be the narrator, but you know, it was just a posh British person. In my heart, I had to like separate myself from some of it. I mean, some were written for a character, and like London Hughes, who's an incredible British comic, she just embodied everything I wanted about one of the other leads. So it's a combination of that. I mean, I always have the characters' voices in my head, and I have an idea about what they look like, but you can never figure, you know, you can't guarantee it in casting. I just got really lucky because it was still COVID and people were looking to work and they were doing me a favor.
I was wondering, because Neil Gaiman is one person on Third Eye. Yes. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I was wondering if that was something that you specifically wrote for, or chose by hand on purpose.
I mean, he was certainly first choice of people I knew, you know. I mean, I had to make a list of dream casting.
Mm-hmm.
And Audible was like, dream cast. And I ended up getting everybody on board pretty much from, you know, I mean, but they offered to help. But it was like, well, my dream cast are people I actually do have access to. You know, podcasting is, of course, a low budget situation. Not quite. I mean, it probably is as low budget as web series. I can't somehow get a budget, but it's okay because I'm making the things I need to make. Mm-hmm. And my friends are willing to show up for me because they like the things I make.
Yeah. It's fun, too.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And the fact that he said that he was doing the material because not as a favor, but because it was very good, like made me tear up because somebody of that caliber. It's just whenever you interact with Neil, I'm like, this is surreal. I'm like hot.
Right. We interviewed his editor, Elisa Quitney, a few weeks ago. And and she's delightful. But we kind of felt that way, too. We were like, she's just really cool.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I don't think that anybody Neil would work with would be a jerk or artificial in any way. He has such a gentle, wonderful soul.
Definitely authentic. Which is the word of the year, according to, was it Webster?
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah. Okay, cool.
We learned that last week. Yeah, I guess the Oxford English Dictionary decided that Rizz, R-I-Z-Z, is the word of the year.
Okay.
Which is one we had to look up because
I am unclear as to what it means. I think it's fancy, right?
Like it's rich like and your fancy? Ability to attract.
Charisma. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Riz, charisma. And then authentic. We know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't, go Google that because you ought to know.
Yeah. I don't know what authenticity is.
One of the things I think that's really interesting is a lot about your journey into art itself. Could you talk to us a little bit about how you got interested in art and how that kind of led you into the career you have now?
I mean, visual art, I just am always, I think that I'm a creative person. I think my mom encouraged me to be a creative. She enrolled me in ballet and, oh, we have a kitty.
Yes.
We have ballet and I was a classical violinist and I was very much, I don't know, I studied opera. I had all these very classical upbringing. And so like, I was very snobby. I wore a lot of black. I was very much like, I'm just going to read a book on Schiele this week. And I'm just going to, I mean, I'm not really, I think it was authentic in that I felt myself to be a high society artistic person and, you know, what I felt closest to and which I abandoned. And I actually would like to find my way back to is, you know, classical music, performative art, you know, all these things. Mm-hmm. And so I really, I don't know where that came from. It wasn't like it was not my heritage. I'm from Alabama, but I guess being sort of that sort of, I don't know, fancy nobility. I have no idea why my mom was raising me. Like, I just don't know, understand. I think it was very aspirational for her and I adopted it as part of my personality. So I certainly know a lot more about Sibelius than any rap artist, but you know, that's not useful to anyone nowadays. So, but I still love it. I still love classical music. And I actually have started trying to encourage myself to listen to it more because it is much closer to my heart than anything else. And just because people don't care about that aspect of myself doesn't mean that I should not engage with it, right?
But you were going to say something, Trey.
Well, I had studied opera for probably about 8 years. And one of the things that I walked away from that with is how many people want to get into classical music, but they don't always have the accessibility to do it. Mm-hmm. They aren't always given that opportunity to have a thought about it. There's this big perception about things that could be a whole diatribe, but I'm going to shove that to the side of the room for a second and just say it. For me, it was an accessibility. And I think for a time, I also adopted that very hoity-toity sort of this sort of thing. But while I may have a voice for opera, I also have the personality of musical theater. So I'm the person that on an opera line just give you jazz hands. So I started recognizing that that was a little bit different and that you could be quite humorous. But I'm about to get into a tangent of things. And I'm just going to say, I think that everyone has an opportunity to get back into classical music. Just give yourself an opportunity to listen.
Yeah, I think it's pretty hard. You're right. It's hard to have an entry point. And that's why everybody does like Bernstein and like, you know, all that kind of transitional jazz, you know, classical kind of stuff. But you got to remember, I mean, I think it's fun to put it in context where like Lord Byron was like a superstar. He was like Brad Pitt. And you have to think about these people like Mozart. He was like this drug. You know, if you read Leonardo da Vinci's biography, he wore pink robes around town and it was completely effeminate in a way that was aggressive toward anybody who tried to make him conform. He was out and out just aggressively eccentric and just a weirdo, like an absolute weirdo who rebelled against the status quo. So all these artists that we have lasted the test of time, you know, I mean, maybe Bach wasn't the biggest partier, but you know, some of these people were, they were super, super cool. They were our movie stars and our rock stars back in the day. And if you kind of think of them in that context, it is a lot more interesting. So I guess, you know, maybe as an entry point, like read a biography of one of these people and kind of humanize their work. And then it isn't so stiff and unapproachable. I mean, most of them had syphilis, like they're partying, man.
That was my favorite thing about music history is the professor asked us, how many well-known composers do you think actually had syphilis? And we were like, I don't know, 2, 3.
Schubert. Like, yeah.
Try like 9.
Yeah. They had the syph, man, and it was incurable. So like, and that they got that through, you know, effing, you know, like it wasn't just like they ate some bad sushi. Like this is, they were dirty birds.
Especially in a time when it was incurable to take that risk.
They were getting it on. Like there was some weird stuff happening between people and their wives and their, like, you know, you got to dig in there.
Dig in there. Somebody clip that. That's wonderful. Yeah, good old mercury treatments on the nethers.
Yeah. Really bad. I mean, my daughter is obsessed with Horrible Histories, and like she, I mean, this is a wonderful book series for people. It is very graphic. Like if you look at history, there were horrible people in this this book series, whatever era. And like I was reading about some emperor. It was like one of the emperors I'd never heard of, a Roman emperor. They were messed up, these dudes. And they were like, they would invite people over and people would be forced to eat live parrots from the inside out. And like they would cut people's fingers and their hands and feet off. And I'm just like, this is horrible. And I'll try to gloss over it with my daughter. I'm like, and they murdered them. Like that's the mild thing I could say. They just killed them. They fed them to lions. They didn't cut their hands and feet off. It's so horrible some of the things that they describe in these histories, but I'm like, that's kind of what it was, you guys.
Yeah, we are much more civilized.
Yeah, we have it easy, man.
They unalived Everybody's, them.
Yeah, they unalived them, exactly.
And I think I derailed what you were going to say, Emily.
I don't even remember.
The eating live parrot thing really kind of
that's reset, threw you off. Whatever I was thinking.
It's horrible.
I alluded to it earlier, but I'm really curious, for games that have that like divergent sort of storytelling where you could go, depending on the choices you make in game, you have like this over here, and you get this dialogue option. From like an actor's perspective, recording all that dialogue, how do you prep for something like that?
I mean, it is... It was very difficult because we were still under COVID protocols to record the Third Eye stuff. And it was all scripted, and it took, I'm not exaggerating when I say I wrote it for years. Now there might be a 6-month gap before the executives would be like, hi, checking in. We're going to restart the you know, cause it was COVID. There was just too much things in the up in the air. So I would send a draft out, and then it'd be 6 months or 3 months. And so I wasn't continuously writing, but it took a long time, and it did give me the opportunity to really create a unified whole, where most of the time in TV, you're just writing to get a little bit ahead of yourself, and you kind of know where you're going a little bit, but you don't really, you know, all the T's were crossed and the I's are dotted. And then when you record, like, yeah, there's scenes with like 5 or 6 people in them, but I read all the parts opposite them. So they probably have me recording. I read with every single actor. And I not only performing my part, but everybody else's, because I wanted everybody to have energy and feel like they're acting with somebody. And I think, you know, it made a big difference. And they have my, you know, many options for my lines, because I probably recorded it 15 times each.
Yes.
So then you can release it later as the Felicia version.
Yeah, they could just do Felicia reading everybody's lines. One woman show.
How does that look for something like Stray Gods, where the choices you make in-game impact the dialogue options later? Like, how do you prep for something like that?
That was a very hard thing to prep for, because when they sent the script was a little bit easier, because it would be very clear that, okay, this is when the lead character picks to be friendly or hostile. That was fine. When I got the music, it was absolutely incomprehensible. And I am a professional musician, but, you know, the fact that Austin Wintry was able to put this stuff together and make it work on the fly with people playing a game and picking different endings and different dialogue choices and different lyrics, I think it's just a masterpiece. I cannot believe he did it. And when I got it, I was like, I'm so confused about what's going on here. But I did have tracks, and I am able to read music, and I was like, oh, wow, all my ear training and my music theory and everything is paying off. I could read all this. I kind of can figure it out. So I don't know how the actors who don't read music figured it out. They must have done it by ear. And I'm like, God bless them. They're way better than me. But yeah, that was so complex, especially the finale, that I don't know how it was written or performed or came out as well as it did. It's just a masterpiece.
I honestly can't wait. Please, nobody in the chat, spoil it for me. I have not gotten through the game yet. I haven't even really started it. It's on my list. We just finished Baldur's Gate 3. Please don't.
I don't think it will take that long. It's like a 4 or 5 hour game. It's definitely not not like Baldur's Gate.
Okay. But still, I can't wait. So please don't spoil it for me, anybody in the chat, please.
Yeah.
You're the perfect Athena. Cleves Mill says, you are the perfect Athena, god of wisdom and strength.
Oh, that's a very big compliment. Yeah, that was a part that is very different for me. She's a more aggressive, confident, mature woman. And it was very fun to play it, because I usually play teenagers who are very uncertain about themselves or geeky. And it's fun to be able to branch out into different aspects of who I am now as I get older, but also just playing different roles. And so, yeah, that I really... I think that all the actors did an incredible job in that game. And I really wish it was lauded more, because it really was a feat of writing and composing.
It sounds like it. What a feat. I was thinking, I remembered what it was, Trey, the thing I was going to say. It just occurred to me again. And that was, I don't know if this is a big reach, but because there's some relatability there, I was thinking about how you said you grew up with a lot of classical music and opera and things like that. And I thought about how maybe that kind of plays into your love for fantasy in that, you know, there are themes of classical themes in fantasy, like castles and dragons and things like that. Like maybe that is still somehow tied to that somewhere in the neurons.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I will say that my obsession with Anne of Green Gables led me to be obsessed with romantic poets. Mm-hmm. So I was like 13 years old and I was reading like Shelley and, you know, I was reading all these Tennyson. I was like, oh, I love Tennyson. He's, you know, that one poem, The Goblin Market. It was Elizabeth something. I can't remember her name. Anyway, I was obsessed with that poetry only because of Anne of Green Gables, because she does that scene where she has Lady of Shalott.
Yes.
And I was like, I'm going to do that. I want to be Anne of Green Gables. So honestly, I would say Anne of Green Gables influenced me to be who I am more than anything, because I wanted to be a swoony, overly romantic redhead. So that's really the root of everything.
Yeah. She felt like who I deep down wanted to be able to be.
Mm-hmm. Deep down. Deep down. Such big feeling. So romantic. And you know, it was almost disappointing that when she grew up, she got more practical. But yeah. she ended up with Gilbert, who, and then you read the later books and like her kid, like there's death. It's terrible. They get real dark, those books.
Mm-hmm. Did you see Anne with an E, the Netflix series?
I didn't, you know, and I'm obsessed with Anne, the miniseries with Megan Follows. And I met her once and I have to say she's one. I was like, oh my God, it's Megan Follows.
Yeah.
But I need to watch Anne with an E because I hear it's wonderful and I really should dive into it.
Highly recommend it. I want to
watch it. Yeah, I want to watch it with my kid. Maybe she might be old enough for Anne of Green Gables. Maybe not.
Probably. They start with her pretty young, even younger than I think Megan Follows was.
Yeah, and Megan Follows looked like she was 18 playing like 15, you know? Mm-hmm. And this kid really, the Anne with an E really looks like a kid. So yeah. I really need to watch it.
I think a 6-year-old could probably at least start watching it.
Yeah, I'll watch it. Yeah, she can't watch the grown-up version, but
just as good as, at least for me, it was just as good as I hoped it would be.
Oh, that's great. Okay, yeah. I'll definitely check it out.
And I was a huge fan of the original.
Huge fan. I loved Emily of New Moon. I wanted to be an orphan so bad.
Yep. I always thought that, you know, it would be cool because, like, my name's Emily. So, like, I have to be able to identify with this character.
Yeah.
I felt that way about Emily Dickinson, too. Like, I have to love her poetry.
Yeah.
And I just, that was one I just couldn't.
Yeah. No, I've never been a huge, she's very tormented in her attic.
What is the look on your face, Trey?
He's judging you.
Oh, no, I'm not judging you. I had a very realistic reaction to my American Lit professor making me sing, what was it? Was it Oh Beautiful to the tune of an Emily Dickinson poem? All of her poetry is written in like common time, so you can set it perfectly to some famous American song out there. Just to prove his point, he's like, oh yeah, we've got a music major in the room. Would you mind singing this for us?
Oh, that's horrible. Who would do that?
This guy who wound up giving me a music scholarship later, so I can't say any bad things.
That's like, who would do that? Jen Bupre. That's who would do it.
that explanation, we had a Canadian singer on our show, and Emily admitted that, you know, she was thinking about getting into singing and was kind of nervous about it. And so Jen made her sing live on this podcast.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. She was like, let's go. And I'm like, I had this moment where I have a decision to make. This is a live show. Am I going to be the lame one who doesn't sing? Because that's how I viewed it in the moment. Or am I going to just go for it and suck anyway? And
well,
I went
for you.
I went for it.
Yeah, good for you.
And I thought, I felt like I needed to be an example, if not for myself, for everybody else.
I mean, listen, I'm not going to judge anybody. Like, I remember in scene study in Hollywood, they would say, if you get naked on stage, it's very freeing. And I refuse to do it. I refuse to pay for scene study class and get naked. But like, I do feel like there is a component of nudity, maybe emotional nudity, that maybe physical nudity can help you through that. And I mean, now I regret not preserving my younger body on film somehow, but you know, we can't go backwards.
We can't. That's true. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's empowering, long-term empowering.
Yeah.
To do things you're uncomfortable with like that, whether it's live or broadcast or not.
Yeah. I mean, with good lighting, I should have just embraced it, but you know, it's all good.
Well, no regrets.
No regrets, no judgment. Nothing. Right. You do what you need to do as an artist. I don't care.
Right. If you're put on the spot, you still have the choice to roll with it or not.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to talk about really quick. You did the official Rings of Power podcast.
Yes.
And that was so exciting and awesome. And I was wondering if you have any plans to do another one for the new season.
I would love for them to ask me back. Being able to read the Silmarillion as a paid gig was like the best thing in the world, because I actually like the Elf and this age better than especially the Hobbit. I was never a huge fan of the Hobbit. Lord of the Rings I loved because, again, elves. But like, this era is so full and lush and romantic. And yeah, it is the most romantic era. So I think that's why I was, I'm sorry, Hobbit and their feet. It's just, I don't want to think about them.
I agree with you there.
Yeah. And also the female roles are very spotty. And if you, even the Silmarillion, if you really dig into it, there's Luthien and there's an amazing female characters in the lore that are with this and, you know, previous ages. And I think it's really something that I'm excited for them to dive into more. You know, I think every first season has its bumps, but I loved every minute of it. And the people behind it have a passion that is so incredible. So I'm so excited to see what they do for season two. And I would be thrilled to be asked back to talk to some of the cast members I never talked to and just anything. Yeah, I would love that. I can't control whether they ask me back or not, but it would certainly be a thrill for me.
Well, if any of the powers at B are listening.
Yes. Mr. Bezos. Yeah. Mr. Bezos, please have him back.
It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like there was, I met with some opposition online with some of my overly enthusiastic views of the show.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's hard if you are too adhering to the original content. And also, you know, there were some pacing things a little bit. I could see, but you're creating a whole world from scratch. You got a lot to get through. And the fact that they did it so efficiently and with the cast they did, you know, everybody's going to pick things apart. It makes them feel important. And, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to make a decision and film it.
Right. And the people that are criticizing it don't know what it's like to have to create that world and be there and make last minute changes and actually make it all happen.
It would thrill me to see. I mean, what they built is like unreal. It would thrill me to see it in person, any of the sets, because the workmanship is just stunning.
That would be awesome. Let's go, Trey.
Yeah, make it happen. They should have a tour. I think they had some behind the scenes, how they made it kind of stuff on Amazon that they didn't publicize as well as they should have, because like the behind the scenes is fascinating and the way that they did what they built, all of it. So if you can track those down, because they're 100% worth, they're the kind of things that you buy a DVD for, but nobody buys DVDs anymore. So try to find it and watch it, because it's absolutely great.
Yeah, watch it while it's available, because one day it might not be.
Yeah, like Rise of the Pink Ladies.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a deep cut for myself. I love that show.
I don't know about this.
I don't even know it either.
Oh, so it's a prequel series to Grease.
I read about that, but they aren't making more of it, right?
No, at least not right now. They had put so much into this work, all new music, sets. It's like how the Pink Ladies came to be. And then about 2 months after it premiered on Paramount, just nixed completely.
Yeah, they just buried it. Yeah. It's happening a lot. That's why you got to make your own stuff that you control. And if you could sell something and get paid for it, that's great, but it should exist.
Which is one thing I wanted to ask about. And I'm sorry if you've asked this enough, but what we have been really fortunate to start to build our community here with Modern Romantic Podcast. What was it like for you starting up Geek and Sundry and getting those projects underway from really from the ground up?
It was hell. It was absolute hell. We had like 3 months to do all of it. We needed 40 hours of content. And it was just too much to make. It was unrealistic. And I broke myself, quite frankly. Like it was, and there were shows that got made that weren't polished enough, but because we were forced to release them on a certain timeline, because YouTube decided that, you know, they needed a ton of content first off and we couldn't wait and roll things out later. You know, I don't fault them. It was a grand experiment and they had some reasons for saying that, but I, of course, was too ambitious in the kind of shows I wanted to make. So, for example, Sword and Laser was an amazing show, but it needed a little bit more development as far as format and time for launching and publicity and all that stuff. And we just couldn't do it. And so, I mean, I'm very, very proud of the shows we made. But again, if we had had more runway, a little more budget, it was just a lot to take on for the budget that we had. And I would just recommend, you know, everything's not going to hit. Every idea is not going to be a winner. It's just what the nature of everything. And so you got to have to try a lot of things, see what resonates, and then dig into that. So, you know, you can have an idea of what you want to do, but you'll never know what you're going to stumble upon. And being open to that is a beautiful thing. And, you know, being able to stream or do low budget video gives you the privilege of trying to you can pivot in a way that you can't when things have a lot more pressure on them.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So for those that are kind of rife with that, because like with your book and what you just said is kind of getting past that point of being scared to do something and just trying it, but also you never know what idea is going to land. So what would you recommend to somebody who's kind of scared to try to do something to just convince themselves to go and do it?
I mean, you have to find a why. Why are you doing it? And I think a lot of the things that we're scared of are showing people, other people's judgment and the failure. And the failure is of reception versus like the product. So it really is about concentrating on what you're making and the finish of that and making as wonderful as you can be and making sure that you are backing it with all your heart. And the reception of it, you can't control these things. You can't. You could do your best. You could prep. You could do social media. You can use your connections. You could link it to everybody. You could do that hard work, but that's not the work of the creation. And that's not a reflection on your creation. And at the end of the day, every creation is a stepping stone to the next one. So it's not part and parcel of everything you are. And I have to tell myself that too. Like, you know, Third Eye, I spent 5 years on it. Of course, I would want it to be on everybody's top 10 list. Like, it's not. It's successful. It's on some. Something could always be less successful and so always more successful, but it's not the reception is not the point. The point is that I made it. It touched a lot of people. And now I'm a different person and a different artist having worked through it. And now the next thing I make is going to be better because I have experience and I know myself better. And so artistry is a journey. It's definitely not, about the art itself. It's about you as a person, as an artist, and how you work through the work that you can get done in your life. So I guess that's my ending kind of advice to anybody, including myself.
Right. Well, and I agree with all of that because I don't necessarily believe in failure for all of those same reasons.
No. When I play, my kid was a little kid, we would do a 20-sided dice and we'd do storytelling. And I'd be like, okay, roll the 20-sided, you come upon a troll, roll the 20-sided dice and he lets you through, or if it's over 10, he lets you through. If it's under 10, you get to solve a problem and you get a reward. So any failure, I always told her, I kind of presented it as something that's unexpected, but you get something extra at the end for going through it. And like, I was like, Felicia, you need to take this advice yourself, because as a perfectionist in recovery, like I'm always just like, I want it to be perfect. I'm like, no, there's no perfect.
No, and it doesn't have to be.
No.
Perfectionism is kind of hard, though, for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's hard for me. That's why I don't have a novel yet. One day.
One
One day.
day.
One day.
I agree.
One
Yes.
day.
We should do it. I'm a big supporter of this novel idea, FYI.
One day. One day. I got to get through these stage plays for some reason. I keep working on formats that make me less and less money. That's just really my goal.
That's wonderful. Well, like you said, stepping stones. And if you
Yeah.
really do want to do it all, this is the way to do it. Because your goal doesn't have
Exactly.
to be always to monetize everything.
No. You should make things because you want to make them. Yeah.
That's right. That's why we're here.
And I still, yeah, I was just gonna say it, yeah,
I'm just
there's a
kidding.
lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
So you've talked about stage plays. What are some of the other upcoming projects that you have that we can look forward to?
You know, next year's still up in the air. I have a couple of indie projects that I shot as an actor that will be out next year. Again, I'm working on these stage plays. I have a graphic novel that's not out until 2025, but I'm working on that.
Awesome.
And I'm getting back into acting a lot more. So I hope that I'll have a lot more
Cool.
work. And if not, I'll be on Twitch streaming video games. So just follow me. I have a newsletter, felicitations.substack.com, and I have all of my work you can find on Felicia.day, which is my website, and on all the social media, which is Felicia Day everywhere but TikTok, which is Felicia.day.
And Third Eye is available on Audible.
Yeah, audible.com/third eye. Thank you.
Yep.
I really hope that people listen to it and enjoy it.
Because until she writes that novel, this is what you're getting. You might
This
as
is
well
it. This is my novel in audio
get it
TV
while you
form.
can.
TV audio form. I don't know. It's TV for your ears, as Cleves Mill, one of my community members, says.
TV for your earballs.
Yep.
Two last questions for you. This is a question that we normally ask our guests, and I think Emily's normally the one who asks this, but I want to ask this one this
I
time.
know which one it is.
How dare you? Don't read my brain.
Should we ask it in tandem and see if it's right?
Yes, Felicia,
No,
excuse
just do it.
the delay. Okay. What is one thing about what you do that makes you just go, "Yes, this is what I'm doing, what I'm doing."
This is
Oh,
why.
wow.
Yeah.
This is why. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably people at conventions telling me that something I made them make a different life decision, like becoming a programmer, coming out of the closet, like because of one of my characters, starting to do their own series. Like there's a lot of people who were inspired to just make things because of me. And I really do believe that you could find your freedom in creating things that are only things you can create. I think that's really important for your soul while you're on Earth. Like nobody else can make your horse. Like to bring it full circle, that horse is the thing that you're drawing that nobody else draws exactly like you. So get
Right.
it out there.
Absolutely.
100% agree. Last question I have is, who is one person you, if you found out that they appreciated your work, loved your work, who would you want that person to be, and why is it Julie Andrews?
I mean, that would be pretty cool. Julie Andrews is what. No, I have to tell you, I already had that dream come true. George R. R. Martin at a party came up to me. I was like, I
Oh.
love The Guild. And I literally almost started crying. And
Oh, I
it ended up that last year he asked me to act in a short that he produced, just a little film festival short that he produced, just because he
Oh.
loves my work. So, yeah, the more you put yourself out there, the more people will see you for who you want to be. And I think that's really important. So, yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's an
But Julie
awesome.
Andrews, I'd accept that one too.
What an awesome life highlight.
I know. It
Very
was pretty
cool.
cool. Nowhere but there, there's nowhere to go with it from there but down, really.
I don't know. There's still Julie Andrews.
True. She's still alive, I think.
Yes.
Right. She's still got Bridgerton.
Oh, yeah. She's really good at that. Yeah.
Excuse me while I quickly Google, is Julie Andrews still alive?
No,
Yeah, you
don't
never
do
know.
it. Don't
You
do
never
it.
know.
We cannot jinx this.
No. Knock on everything wood, she is still alive. Thank
Okay,
God.
that's good. Yeah.
Sorry.
We would have heard. We would know.
Listen, people die all the time. We're all going to get there.
Seriously, this has been an incredible hour. Felicia, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us here. You are such a You are such an authentic person, and I think that shows in the work that you do. So
Oh,
thank you so
well, it's
much.
the year of authenticity, so I appreciate it. No, thank you. I hate that I was tardy, and thank you for what you do and celebrating romance and art in the world. We need more of that. So thank a lot.
You.
All right, bye.
Bye, everybody.